Welcome back to those of you that we haven't seen for a while because you've been on vacation. It's good to see you. Lots of faces that I haven't seen in a while between my travels and yours. It's awesome. Next week, maybe everybody will be back. Well, it's a holiday, right? So we got two more weeks for everybody gets back. But anyway, welcome to our service. It's great to be worshiping together. If you're new, checking us out, a guest this morning, we are especially glad that you've chosen to worship with us this morning. There is a card in the front of your pew. We used to have pews, now we have chairs, in the front of the pocket, in the chair in front of you. I mean, spit it out. That's a connection card. We'd love to connect a name with a face. And also, if you're around here a lot, you can always use those cards for questions, comments, ideas, share your prayer concerns with us. We pray over that stuff every Tuesday morning in staff meeting. But it's great to be worshiping together. I want to talk about a couple of things. First of all, we've got back-to-school kickoff. I called it a celebration last week, and I realized it's really not a celebration. It's a celebration for parents, not for kids. So it's a back-to-school kickoff, and the theme is superheroes. And so my dilemma this morning was this. Do I wear the Superman shirt, or do I go as Clark Kent and pull out the shirt and tie, right? And I decided, well, in our church, I'm actually going to get less questions about why I'm wearing a Superman T-shirt to church on Sunday than I would a shirt and tie. So that's I love our church. I love how casual we are and all of that. So anyway, the other couple things I wanted to talk about, though, is one of our strategic objectives as a church is to do what we call handing over the keys of leadership to the next generation, that we don't only want to reach and connect with 30-somethings and 20-somethings and teenagers, but we actually want to give them leadership in our church. We want them to be the ones ultimately leading our church. And I just wanted to give props to one of our high school students who helped us out this week over the last couple of weeks with some of our social media stuff. I don't want to embarrass them, but Joy Wong, she's right down here. Raise your hand, Joy, real quick. Thank you. She signed up a few weeks ago. She wanted to get more involved in some of the social media stuff that we're doing as a church, as our outreach and all that. And so she connected with Sharla and on our staff and with Lex, our student pastor, and they sat down and figured out some strategies. And they were able to jump us from about 45, 49 people following us on Instagram to about 102 in just a couple of weeks. So that's really cool and awesome. And all that just to say, too, you should be following us on social media. How many of you are on some format of social media? By show of hands, so that's almost all of us in the room. If you don't know what social media is, that's okay. We've got a great website. But we are on Instagrams, Twitter, Facebook. We're on just about everything except Snapchat. We just haven't figured out how to navigate that one yet. So check us out on those. We use it to just promote stuff that's going on, to share some scripture along the way, spiritual stuff along the way, let you know what's coming up. We celebrate through social media some of the things we see God doing. So connect with us there so you can stay connected throughout the week. The other thing I'm excited about, and I mentioned this last week, is we're doing a video storytelling initiative. And this was kind of the idea of Sharla, who's on our staff, and one of our members, Kristen Booz. And the idea behind this is that we capture some of our stories on video and stories of our faith and how we're growing in our faith, or maybe some of the challenges of our faith, how we're living out our faith. And the benefit of that is when we hear each other's stories, it can encourage us along the way. It can give us examples about how other people are living out their faith. And then when we take those stories and we share them out on social media and our website and stuff like that, we're sharing our story of what God is doing through us individually and through our church with the entire world. And it helps us to change the world. So you're going to be hearing more and more about this over the next few months as we continue to work on this and invite you to participate. And I understand some of us aren't going to be comfortable doing this, and that is great. Others of you are going to love being on video and talking and sharing, and that's awesome too. Today is the very first opportunity to participate, and it's for our kids and our middle and high school students. And what we're going to be doing during the back school kickoff is right out here in the lobby, we're going to have the video set up out in here, and there'll be some of our staff and volunteers walking around kind of inviting you in. Feel free to say, thanks, no thanks, that's not my gig, or it's not my kid's gig, or feel free to join us. But basically, we're asking this question: how do you take what you learn in church and apply it in your life at school? So parents, if you have young kids, you might want to coach them on that question if you think they'd be interested in participating. Middle and high school students, we'd love to hear your answers to that. You can tag team it, bring your friends. You can do it as a group if you don't want to be on camera all by yourself. Okay? Sound good? Awesome. Let's jump to the Bible part, to the church part, to the series part. Grab your notes. We're not in a series right now. Like I said last week, we're the next few weeks, we're doing some topical stuff, and we're going to be looking at some things that I just think all of us tend to struggle with in our faith as followers of Christ, or in life in general, even if we're not followers of Christ. I think a lot of this stuff we struggle with. And these are things that can really affect our lives. There's things that can affect our relationships. There's things that can affect our spiritual growth and our connection to God. And last week we talked about our value and how we should look for our value in what God says, not in what culture says about us. We looked at that story of Zacchaeus. If you weren't here, you might want to check that out. Today we're going to talk about envy. We're talking about envy today. And the first thing that I want to do is just kind of distinguish between envy and jealousy. Because I think the two are different. They're similar, but different. Jealousy is not as deep, okay? Jealousy is not as ugly as envy. Jealousy, I'm not saying it's good, but it's more like a bruise, where envy is more like a hemorrhage in our lives. And here's the deal with jealousy. Jealousy kind of comes and goes. It doesn't leave this residue in your life like envy does. And here's jealousy. Here's an example. You know, let's say I go to the gym, right? And I see a guy there. Maybe he's about my age, and he's working out, and he's got a 30-inch waist and a six-pack, and he's just ripped and everything. And I look at that guy, and I go, yeah, I'd like to be in shape like that guy. I wish I kind of had that guy's physique and everything. But, you know, no big deal. You know, I grab a donut, and I head home, right? But that's jealousy. I don't hold anything against him, right? I'm not holding anything against him. Here's envy. Envy is when I pull into a parking lot, maybe at the mall, and a Porsche is parked across three parking spaces. And you know what I'm talking about, right? Because nobody touches the special car, right? Nobody touches the special car. And so I have to drive around in my little Kia looking for a parking space in the parking spot in this parking lot. It takes me 10 minutes to find one. When I do, I end up parking between the dumpsters and the carts, and I can barely get out of my car. And so I climb out of my car, and as I do and I walk past that Porsche, I just kind of grab my key and just let it slide down the side of his car. That's actually not envy. That's anger. We're going to talk about anger next week, so come back for that. Envy is when I pull into the church parking lot on a Sunday and I see that same Porsche there, right? And I see the guy who's driving it. And I know that guy, and I don't really like that guy so much, because that guy's kind of, you know, he's kind of smug, and he's always kind of flaunting his wealth and what he has, you know. So I whisper to somebody, you know, if that guy would just give a little bit more to the church, I could drive a Porsche too, right? That's envy, because I just made him my emotional rival. Envy is dangerous to our souls because it doesn't leave quickly. It doesn't come and go. We fixate on it. Envy is when you have something that I feel like I deserve more than you, that I should have it and you shouldn't have it. That's envy. And we're all envious over all kinds of different things, right? I don't know what stirs envy in your life. And by the way, for me, it's not really a car. I just completely made that whole situation up. If you drive a Porsche, we're okay, all right? I made all that up. Cars and money and stuff, that doesn't really do it for me. But when I thought about it, you know, what is it that can really have the potential to trigger envy in my life? You know what it is for me? It's when my kids don't measure up to your kids. It's when this is a David Magnet issue. When my kids don't match up to yours, and I'm guessing for some of you who are parents, this might be one that would get you too. But maybe my kid, maybe they're not as good as somebody else's kid in something else, right? Or maybe when they were younger, maybe your kid walked faster than my kid, or your kid started talking at a younger age than my kid did. Or you send your kid to play at my house and they're actually wearing their straight A report card because you've pinned it to their shirt, right? And then we think, you know, at my house, you know, maybe we're not ever going to experience that at our house. Or I go by your house and I see that bumper sticker on your car that says my kid is, and you can just fill in the blank, you know, an honor student, straight A student, whatever. And again, you know, I begin to feel envious because because my child isn't that. And so by show of hands this morning, if you've ever envied somebody's car, their house, their physique, their marriage, their children, their grandchildren, if you've ever envied someone's salary, a promotion they got, their success, their beauty, their hair, their opportunities, their wardrobe, their education, their temperament, their athletic ability, their intelligence, or their spiritual gifts, would you just raise your hands real quick? Okay, awesome. Welcome to Club Envy, right? And for those of you who didn't raise your hand, in 2 weeks, we're talking about honesty and humility and denial. You want to get here early, front row seat for those of you guys, okay? But we've all experienced envy in our lives, haven't we? I mean, we all have experienced envy. Envy is universal. But here's the deal. If envy goes unchecked, it can become very destructive in our lives. I think this is a serious deal. Envy makes people do evil things. In fact, there are people sitting in prison today. And for some of them, you can trace back the foundation of what they did to some level of envy in their lives. So I made a list of what I think envy does, what I see envy do in my life, in my friend's life, in people that I know, in people that I've talked to through the years in their lives. I want to read you some of these things on my list because I want you to understand the negative side of envy, because if we don't understand the negative side of it, we're never going to want to go after it in our lives. But here's some of the things that I think envy does. You can probably add to the list, but first, envy keeps your current and future relationships from growing. They keep your current and your future relationships from growing. Envy creates inaccurate judgments of other people. Envy hurts innocent people. Envy, it reveals the condition of our hearts, doesn't it? Envy can lead to sin and serious consequences in our lives. Envy can diminish our enjoyment in life. Envy chips away and it can destroy the work of God in your life. So what's the bottom line? Or here's the bottom line. You can't live a happy life and be envious at the same time. It's impossible to do. You can't be happy and envious because envy wants something that it does not have. So let's get to the Bible part. I want to show you a story this morning from the life of a guy named Joseph. And you grew up as a kid in church. You've heard the story of Joseph before. I remember seeing it on the flannel graph when I was in fourth, fifth grade. It's in Genesis chapter 37. If you got a Bible, you might want to flip there. If you don't, we'll put it up on the screen. And I'm only going to read the first half of this very, very tragic event in Joseph's life. It's actually a long, drawn-out event that spanned years and years for Joseph in his life. It goes all the way to chapter 50 of Genesis. I'd encourage you to read the second half. It's a great, great story. It's full of lots of drama. I tell you, you don't need to watch Netflix. You just need to read your Bibles. There's lots of drama there. But on the front half of Joseph's life, there is envy that happens to him that really goes bad. And in Joseph's story, you need to know three characters, okay? First, it's Jacob, the dad. And then second is Joseph. He's the son. And then there's just a whole bunch of brothers in the story. So here's the story. It says this. Now, Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. Now, let's just stop right here for a minute. We're just going to unpack this as we go along. But in these first few words, we have the setup for a giant problem. We have a breeding ground here for envy. Because not only did Jacob, the dad, love Joseph, the son, more than any of the other brothers, but evidently he told people he did. This seemed to be common knowledge. The writer certainly knew about it. And I have two words for Jacob, the father. Parenting class. Okay? He could use it. I mean, this is an envy setup right here. Not only is Joseph the favorite, the one that dad loved the most, but now as we look at the story, now dad gives him a special gift. Verse 3. So one day he, the dad, Jacob, gave Joseph a special robe. So now the favoritism takes on a very concrete form, doesn't it? He gives him a robe. And in the Hebrew, this word for robe, it's pretty difficult to translate. The King James Version is the one that made it famous because they called it the robe of many colors. Right, you saw the same flannel graph I did. But whatever it was, this was one sweet coat, wasn't it? And this robe says special. This robe says, it says valued. And it might have been really, really expensive. It probably was really, really expensive. It's an expression of a father's love. And in that day and age, and in that culture, it was also an expression of status. And this was in your face, raw favoritism. Every time Joseph wore this robe and his brother saw it, he just kind of twisted the knife a little bit more. And don't you think Joseph probably wore that robe a lot? I mean, I'm sure he did. It's like that freshman kid who somehow gets a Letterman jacket. It could be 1,000 degrees outside, and that kid's going to wear that jacket because he's the only freshman that's got one, right? And when Joseph wore this robe, it was always communicating to the brothers, you're not the favorite. I'm Dad's favorite. Dad loves me more. You're second best. As we unpack this text, one of the things I want to do is just kind of drop some envy nuggets on you that might help us understand envy a little bit better. And one of the ones I don't want you to miss is this. Envy always starts with mild jealousy. Envy starts with mild jealousy. And there can be legitimate concern. There can actually be a legitimate reason for some jealousy to pop up. I mean, Joseph's brothers, don't you think they had a legitimate reason to feel the way they did and for jealousy to kind of pop up the way that his father was treating Joseph? Sure. But the question for us today is how do we capture jealousy? How do we diffuse it so that it doesn't turn from jealousy into envy and envy turns ugly or it turns to anger as like we see in the next verse? And here's what it says. But his brothers hated Joseph because of their father's partiality. And they couldn't say a kind word about him. And this is a really interesting part of the passage to me because the brothers hated Joseph, but who should they have really been upset with? Yeah, I mean, the dad, right? Jacob. I mean, who's really at fault here? Jacob, the father, is the one that set this up. Joseph wasn't really doing anything wrong. He just got this gift from his dad. But the text says they grew angry, not at the dad. Rather, they grew so angry at Joseph, they couldn't say a kind word about him. And here's another little envy nugget you might want to write down. That's how envy works. Envy distracts us from the real issues. Envy goes to blame when envy really should look internally. It causes you to blame the wrong person or the wrong things. The brothers wanted dad's love. I don't think it was so much about the coat for them. They wanted dad's love. They wanted dad's acceptance. But here's what envy does. Envy clouds our perspective. Envy turns friends or potential friends into enemies. When you think of your rival and you can't think of a kind word to say about them, that's a red flag that it's envy. Story continues. One night, Joseph had a dream and promptly reported the details to his brother, causing them to hate him even more. Listen to this dream, Joseph announced. We were out in the field tying up bundles of grain, and my bundle stood up, and then your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before it. The brothers said, sure, you're going to be our king, are you? His brothers taunted, and they hated him all the more for this dream and for what he had said. And if you read the entire story, you see he had a second dream a night or two later, a really, really similar dream, and he comes and he tells them all about that too. And those of you who grew up in a family, particularly if you grew up with brothers, you can just kind of see this scene playing out a little bit, can't you? I mean, can you just see Joseph going, you guys, you just got to hear this dream that I had last night. I mean, I had this dream, and the dream was that you guys, all of you, are going to serve me. Isn't that awesome? Aren't you happy for me? And as a matter of fact, why don't we practice that right now? Let's play follow the leader's command. You guys bow, right? I mean, that's what he's doing here. And now the brothers, they hate him even more. And they hated him so much, now they start to plot. They begin to plot of how can they take care of the robe and how can they take care of the favorite one. And here it is. When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance and made plans for him. And here's the question I had. How do you think they recognized Joseph in the distance? Could it have been that coat of many colors that just couldn't miss it, right? But here's another sign of envy. Here's another envy nugget. When you're envious, you don't need the whole picture. When you're envious, you don't need all of the details. When you're envious, just a whiff of something can kind of stir up that resentment in your heart. When you're envious, you don't have to see the complete person or the complete situation. When you're envious, you can just hear the first syllables of that person's name, and all of a sudden, envy can emerge. You don't need the whole picture. And it says they wanted to kill Joseph. They said, "Here comes that dreamer," they exclaimed. And here's another little envy nugget. When you're envious of someone, you reduce them down. You reduce them down to a term. You depersonalize them. You dehumanize them. All of a sudden, they're not somebody's son or somebody's daughter or a brother or a sister. They just get termed in a cynical way by the possession that you don't have that you think you deserve. You know, here comes Mr. Porsche. Here comes Mr. Rich Guy. Here comes Mrs. Promotion and all of that. Whatever it is, you reduce them down. Here comes that dreamer. So when Joseph arrived, and here's where it turns violent. When Joseph arrived, they pulled off his beautiful robe. They threw him into a pit. And when the traders came by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the pit and sold him for 20 pieces of silver. And the Ishmaelite traders, they took him along to Egypt. Their evil fell short of actually killing him. They actually wanted to kill him. One of the brothers, if you read the story, talked him out of him. But they definitely wanted to destroy him. And that's what envy does. Envy seeks to destroy. If I can't have the robe, then I don't want anybody to have the robe. That's envy. If I can't have it, then I don't want you to have it either. So they get rid of him, and now they've got to come up with a scheme. Now they've got to come up with a story. And here's the story they come up with. Then Joseph's brothers, they killed a goat and dipped the robe in its blood. They took the beautiful robe to their father and asked him to identify it. "We found this in the field," they told him. "It's Joseph's robe, isn't it?" Like there was any real doubt. And their father recognized it at once. "Yes, it is my son's robe. A wild animal has attacked and eaten him. Surely Joseph has been torn to pieces." And for those of you that might not know this about Jacob, the dad's life, when he was a kid, and you can read about his story in Genesis chapter 25, but he understood what it was like to be second best in the eyes of the father. Because he had a brother named Esau, and he had a father named Isaac. And Isaac was going to give Esau the birthright, because in that culture, the firstborn was given the birthright, which meant you got almost everything. And you certainly got all of the status. So Jacob, he devised a plan to trick his dad. And his dad was in his later years, and he was going blind, and he couldn't really see so well. And so Jacob put on this disguise and made his father think that he was Esau and tricked his dad into giving him the birthright. And all of that in his background. And now he's the dad, and guess what? He's pretty much getting the same trick pulled over on him. And you know what that is? Like father, like son. And here's something that I think we all understand about sin. The sin that can entangle our lives, the sin that just continues to defeat us, the sin that we don't take steps to deal with in this generation, we can potentially pass it on to the next generation. And that's exactly what happens in Jacob's life. The dad sees the blood, the robe, the whole bit. And here's what the writer tells us. He mourned deeply for his son for many days. His family all tried to comfort him, but it was of no use. "I will die mourning for my son," he would say, and he began to weep. And the ultimate irony of this tragic, tragic story is that when the brothers get Joseph out of the way, they still don't get what they want from the dad. And it completely backfires on them. I mean, what happens to Jacob? Jacob, all of a sudden, is focusing all of his energy on Joseph and his grief for Joseph. And that's the emptiness of envy. It doesn't really lead us anywhere. And what I want you to walk away with, the thing I want you to see is this picture of the destruction that can be caused by envy when it goes unchecked in our lives. Because until we see what envy does in our lives, we're not going to be motivated to take action on it. It really is a heart matter that separates our relationship with God. So let's go after it and let's take some action. And how do we tackle it? I want to give you a few steps this morning that I think will help us go after envy in our lives and keep it at bay from taking over. And here's the first thing, and this is really, really elementary, but it's important. You just have to acknowledge your envy. You just got to admit it. You've got to take a hard look in the mirror of your heart and admit that maybe there's some envy there. And maybe the simple question to ask is just simply, you know, who am I envious of? Who am I envious of? Start with what's simple. You know, identify who am I envious of. And then when we admit it, you know, I'm envious of so-and-so. You know, I've got it out in the open. I've said it. Here's why I'm envious. I've just taken envy from the darkness into the light. And that's where it can be can be dealt with and we can move forward. I acknowledge it. So now what? Well, here's the second thing I'd encourage you to do. If this is an issue for you right now in your life, and it's simply apologize to God. Apologize to God. Now, for those of you that have been around church for a while, you're probably thinking, oh, you're talking about confession, right? You're telling me I should confess my sins. I need to confess my sins. And you do. That's a good practice if you're a follower of Christ. But that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about apologizing to God. I'm talking about saying, God, I'm sorry. Because here's the deal. Envy is really saying, God, you didn't do it right by me. That your provision that you've given me, it's not enough. You've cheated me out of something that I deserve. God, you owe me. And if you don't remember anything else in this message, I want you to remember this. At the heart of envy is the lie that God owes you. At the heart of envy is the lie that God owes you. And when you focus on others, you're going to always feel shortchanged. You'll always feel like you're owed something. Apologizing to God is the only way I know to break that grip and to change that perspective. At the heart of envy is the lie that God owes you. It's not true. So I acknowledge my envy. I apologize to God. So here's the question. What do I do when I feel envy really popping up? I mean, what do I do when it's coming into my life and I know it's unavoidable and it's going to hit? What do I do when it's between me and someone else and I've already identified that it's there? Well, here's the only way I know to break the grip of envy in your life with other people, and it's to celebrate with others. You've got to learn to celebrate, and this has to become a habit. And you've got to go out of your way to express congratulations to people, to verbally say it, to text it to them, to send them an email, to write them a note. And here's a great test. When a friend of yours or a coworker or somebody you know or a family member, when they succeed and you can't find it within yourself to congratulate them, that ought to be a big warning sign that envy is lurking in your heart, and you will choke on it if you don't deal with it, and it will harden your heart. And you might be sitting here thinking, okay, I can see that, and I get that, and I can understand that, but what if the envy is so, so deep that I just don't feel like celebrating? And if you've been here long enough, you know what my answer is to that, and it's simply you got to do it anyway. That you don't wait until you feel like it. You celebrate until you do feel like it. You keep going, and you keep doing it. Let me give you some examples as we wrap up. Let's say in your neighborhood, the guy down the street who loves to show off, right? He loves to show off his wealth. He loves to show off his stuff and all of that stuff. And you're fueled by envy by that stuff. And he has a brand new car. You know, the one that you've been looking at that you really would like to have, but you just can't afford to have it. Now, you can, in that moment, when you see that, you can be filled with envy and let that take over. Or you can say, I'm not going to let envy run my life. And you can walk down the street to his house, you know, while he's washing his car on Saturday, because every weekend he washes it like 3 or 4 times anyway. And you can say, you know, this is great. This is awesome. Tell me all about it. I'd like to find out more about this. And you go and you open the door and you smell the new car. And you, can I just come down every week or so and just sit in it, because I just love the new car smell? You know, that kind of stuff. You celebrate it. And what happens? It's not going to grip you. And he's not going to become your emotional enemy, and he might actually become a friend in the future, one you wouldn't have otherwise. Or maybe when another example, you know, when their kid hits a two-run homer off of my son, and then strikes my kid out in 3 pitches, you know what I've got to do? I've got to celebrate that. I've got to go to them and say, great job, that was awesome. Or you're at work, and the person that you work with, you know, they get the promotion that you wanted. They get the promotion that you were expecting, and you know in your heart you deserve it. You know in your heart you're better. You know in your heart it should have gone to you. What do you do? I mean, do you allow envy to take over? Or do you go to that person and say, you know, congratulations on that promotion. I know I would have loved to have had it. That's a really big deal. Way to go. Congratulations. You congratulate them. I mean, that's the only way I know to break the grip of envy in your life. When you celebrate and when it becomes a habit, envy won't reside and it won't conquer you. Let me ask you, I mean, can you imagine what your life and my life would look like if there was no envy there? I mean, can you imagine what if your heart was free? What if my heart was free from the pettiness that we feel shackled to when envy pops up and controls it? What if we were free from envy? I mean, can you imagine what that would feel like in our lives? I mean, I can imagine that. I can imagine it for me. I can imagine it for you. But here's the thing. I know that I've got to work at it. Because I always want the robe. I mean, there's something broken in me that always wants the robe. And I can go through life trying to get that robe, that multicolored robe, whatever it is, to fill that need that I think I have, that I think that robe will feel. Or I can focus on God's love for me and know that He has a greater plan and know that He has a preferred future for me, that He doesn't owe me anything. But like we said last week, He loves me, and my value is found in, and my fulfillment, it's found in Him and what He says about me, not in what I have and not in what I don't have and not in what other people around me have, but in what God says about me. So let's go after envy in our lives, and let's keep it from taking its toll on our hearts and our spirits. Let me pray for you. God, every one of us deal with this in our lives at some point or another, and some of us already have, maybe many times. Some of us may be right in the middle of that, where we're just envious of someone and something that they have, or just something that we don't have that we feel like we deserve. So God, help us to get a grip on it. Help us to recognize when just small jealousies are popping up, and deal with those very quickly so they don't become envious. And then help us to deal with the envy in our lives so it doesn't move on to anger and other things like we saw in Joseph's life. And I thank you for this story from Joseph's life. I thank you for giving it to us and for protecting it through Scripture all of these years so that we have it today as an example of what not to do in our lives, of what the destructive power can be when we allow envy to take over. God, help us to just take these few steps, help us to admit it, help us to recognize it, help us to apologize for it, and then help us to develop the habit of just congratulating people, even when we don't feel like it, again, so that we can do battle against envy in our lives. In Christ's name I pray, amen. Let's stand and sing our song of response.